than 2 billion people lack access to safe drinking water services around the world, which is why good corporate water stewardship is imperative, especially in high water risk regions. Global snack giant PepsiCo has developed some industry-leading innovations, including one that uses the water-found potatoes to help run manufacturing sites to improve operational water use efficiency. We chat to David Grant, Senior Director of Global Climate and Water Solutions, about these innovative approaches and how the company has surpassed its 2025 goal a full 2 years ahead of schedule. David, thank you so much indeed for joining me today. Firstly, how do you see climate change impacting businesses in the next decade?
Wow, that's a big question. I think there are a number of pathways that climate change is going to be impacting business, right? We got the very erratic weather patterns like we're seeing at the moment in terms of very unpredictable rainfall, heat waves, etc., etc. I think from my perspective, at least the way I see it playing out most starkly on the ground is particularly around water. We're starting to see that really starting to permeate on the ground in terms of water availability and how water stress is being aggravated globally. At the moment, the stat is around 50% of the global population experiences severe water stress in at least part of the year, which will go up to about 60% of the global population by 2050. And this is largely driven by climate change. Amongst other drivers, no doubt, is increasing demand as populations grow in that. But water is going to be one of those key drivers that business is going to feel as a result of the impacts of climate change.
What role do you believe businesses should be playing in addressing water scarcity, both locally within their markets and globally?
Water plays an integral part in almost every company, right? And if we take PepsiCo, for example, we've recognized the value of water, and PepsiCo was one of the first companies of its size to recognize, water as a basic human right. So it's really integral to the way we approach business. Companies really need to take it from a value chain approach, which is what we do. And if you look at the way our goals are structured and our ambition around water, it's very much around taking it the full transformation of water from agriculture right through to manufacturing. So businesses have got, I guess, a dual role. The one is on the part of on demand. So, how do we reduce our reliance on water, in particularly in high water risk areas? So that's what we do around water use efficiency and doing our best to make the most of every single drop that we bring onto site. But then also we've got a role in terms of addressing the supply of water. So that starts talking about what we do at a watershed level. So, our growers, our communities, they all share a common watershed with us. We all rely on the same water sources. So, companies have got a role to play in terms of how do we protect those sensitive watersheds to start ensuring a sustainability of supply, particularly with the impacts of climate change and how it's going to get progressively worse. So, from a PepsiCo point of view, we've activated a number of programs from a watershed point of view, particularly. So we've got around 35 projects at the moment, working with a range of our partners to implement programs that will support healthy watersheds at the end of the day. And that's across the globe. We're working across Africa, Latin America, North America. And it's really a way to ensure our future and our community's future going forward.
In your opinion, how do you see the water landscape evolving over the next couple of decades?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, I'll talk to it from a company point of view. So, I think companies as a whole are getting far more advanced in their thinking around what we do around water. And, you know, that's kind of reflected in, you know, for example, if you take PepsiCo's goals, and particularly given, I'll take it from a food context, given the nature of the podcast. So we've set a really ambitious goal of reducing our water use efficiency to 0.4 litres for every kilogram of product that we produce. And in order to do that, we really need to invest quite heavily in technology. So, you know, making sure we, whatever water we bring onto site, we make the most use of. So we've got a very strong focus on the recovery and reuse of water within our facilities. A great example of that is an interesting idea that came out of India, where our research and development teams were looking at our potato chip manufacturing process, and potatoes are 80% water.
Right.
So when we fry those potatoes, that water evaporates essentially as steam, and it's lost to the atmosphere. So what they've done there is they've design some technologies to capture that condensate, that steam that comes off the potatoes, and recycle that back into the process, clean it up, and then reuse it. And you know, that's got the ability to save significant amounts of water, which is yeah, one of those great ways to look at that. The other interesting technology that we're looking at, or that we started implementing, is something called membrane bioreactors. And it's quite a kind of complicated word, but essentially what that does is taking water waste, processed wastewater, and treating it back to potable water standards so we can reuse it back into the process. So again, it's really, really, really driving down the water consumption at those sites. So for example, with that membrane bioreactor, we can reduce a site's freshwater consumption by 70%. So, you know, in terms of that future water, it's really, you know, I think companies are getting a lot more advanced in their thinking and really driving down that consumption.
Some of these initiatives that you've mentioned, is PepsiCo currently rolling them out, and in which markets?
Yes. So so with the membrane bioreactors, we currently in 21 sites. And that's, again, globally, it's across a range of countries, India, Mexico, some in North America. And the potato example I gave you, the stack recovery, that again is being rolled out across multiple countries as well. So, you know, I think part of the success in terms of how we arrived at meeting our 2025 goal two years early was this ability to firstly identify best practices and then lift and shift that to other parts of the company. There's no other way we would have achieved that. So we've got a really, really strong focus on knowledge sharing within the company. So we have different forums. We've got a thing called a community of practice, where we have all the water experts that get together on a monthly basis, and we share best practices and you know, what worked, what didn't work. We have an annual global water summit where we get people all together in a room. And again, it's very much a kind of show and tell in terms of both current practices, but importantly, you know, our research and development colleagues, for example, will start talking, will present what Horizon technology is coming down the line as well. So it's this kind of community that's really important within PepsiCo to really make sure that we leverage these technologies and ensure that they multiply elsewhere in the company.
Are these low-cost solutions, or are they quite pricey to implement?
Yeah, so, the where we come from, how we approach this at least is so some of the more advanced technologies are, yeah, absolutely, they carry a price tag, no doubt about it, as with any technology, right? But it's in terms of how we look at that technology. So for example, we use something called a true cost of water toolkit. Now what that does is it really really, I guess, emphasizes what the actual cost of water is at a plot. So typically you'd look at water coming into a facility and we would say, well, we're paying, and I'm making it up now, $1 per gallon that comes into our site. But when that water comes into a site, we treat it, right? And that goes through, you know, filtration, et cetera, et cetera. There's costs associated with that. And there's energy costs, there's parts, there's membranes, et cetera. Then we heat and cool that, there's costs involved with that. And then at the tail end, we treat it again and either reuse it within our facilities or others discharge it into a public system. And there's costs associated with every single part of that value chain within the thing, within the facility. So by calculating all these costs up, we actually have a true figure in terms of, okay, when that liter of water comes onto our site, it's not just the raw water charge you're paying for, it's all the other costs that add up. So for every liter you're reducing by, you're saving these costs as well. So it's really more of a holistic way of looking at the cost of water, which then we use in terms of justifying the technology spend.
Can you drill down and tell me a little bit more about the technology using the water found in potatoes? I find that very interesting.
Yeah, so it's one of those examples of really trying to understand where we can recover and reuse water as much as possible. And yeah, the potato example was literally our research and development guys trying to understand where they can save water and look going through a process and again, you know, understanding that because potatoes are 80% water, there's a lot of water capture, water availability that we're just losing to the atmosphere. So they did some, you know, initial piloting and trials to see, you know, A, how much water is getting lost through that condensation, and B, what ability have we got to capture that water? And through that piloting process, the sums added up very quickly. And then the next process was, okay, how do we clean this water, right? So it's coming off a frying stack, there's a bit of oil in the water, etc., which we need to clean out. So that condensate water is then taken to our water treatment plant, and it's scrubbed, it goes through membranes, and really gets back to that potable water standard where we can then reuse it back into our process. So yeah, really, really, really great way to as I say, reduce that water consumption by about 70% at any given facility. And you know, sometimes these technologies don't have to be that advanced. And I think this is one of the things that I really enjoy about working at PepsiCo is, you know, our colleagues on the ground are typically asking, you know, why are things the way they are, right? And it's this constant questioning. And, you know, one of the really, really great examples that came out of that sort of questioning was a really simple process where when we make tortilla chips, so that those are those kind of corn Doritos type chips that you get, they go through a rinsing process as part of the production process. And just by changing the amount of time that the corn rinsers are exposed to, we estimate that we can save around 610 million liters of water a year throughout these our global factories that produce tortilla chips, right? And that was just it was a simple change in the operating system to change that the flushing of that corn. And no cost at all, zero cost. So this is one of those great examples of where, you know, water saving can be expensive, yes, but it can also be found in the most, you know, unreal places which you wouldn't really typically think of at no cost at all. So it's really this kind of balancing act.
Are you trying to encourage others to follow suit? And are you prepared to share some of your knowledge with others, either within your supply chain or the greater business sector?
This is a shared journey, absolutely, 100%. So, you know, part of the part of the water journey is the fact that we need everyone working in unison, you know, if we're going to tackle this challenge. It is of such a scale that PepsiCo alone will never solve this, right? We can be the most water efficient company in the world. That's not going to change water stress. We need everyone working on this together, right? And there are a couple of ways we're doing this. So let's start at a manufacturing level. So, you know, one of the key, I think, key elements of our success at PepsiCo in terms of achieving our goals is we've got our people on board with us, right? Because at the end of the day, that's the most important. If your people aren't bought into what you're trying to do, it doesn't matter what goal you set, it's not going to happen. So one of the basics that we've got going, for example, is we started something called the PepsiCo Water Academy. And this is a course that we've opened to every single employee, which is basically a water 101. So why should I care about water, right? And it goes everything from where water comes from, stress, how companies can work with that. And because we had so much success with this course internally and the kind of through the feedback and how people are reacting to water and acting in terms of water conservation, we decided to make this course public. So it's now sitting on an open source platform called Coursera, mm-hmm. where anyone can go to and go through it. So that's you know, one of the ways we're trying to share that knowledge and get everyone on that journey with us. We also, you know, the work that we do at a watershed level. So these are the partnerships that we typically work with NGO partners like the Nature Conservancy or WWF. Those invariably are multi-party partnerships, right? So we actively look for other companies that are operating in the same watershed to join us on this journey, right? Because whatever we're feeding, they're feeding as well, no doubt. So it's this commonality of purpose that I think we're trying to get at. So we're doing a lot of work in terms of, as I said, bring people on the journey with us from a watershed point of view. And then also through things like industry forums. So PepsiCo is a member of the Beverage Industry Environmental Roundtable. And that's a group of beverage companies working in a pre-competitive space in terms of how do we calibrate better in common areas to advance things like water, climate change, et cetera, et cetera.
In your opinion, what are the main barriers preventing more widespread adoption of sustainable practices?
I think knowledge is probably one of the key areas. It's you know, making sure everyone's singing of the same hymn sheet at the end of the day. And I think, yeah, first thing we need to make sure everyone is aware of why water is so important and what are the opportunities around there. So I think before anything else, that to me is the main point in terms of democratizing data and knowledge. So everyone has the same access to what we've got, which is exactly what we try and do. So I think that to me would be, I'd probably suggest is the main barrier. You know, technology to a certain extent can be a barrier, but you know there's so much that can be done before you even hit that technology barrier in terms of advanced technology that I wouldn't suggest that's an immediate concern right now.
And looking ahead, what do you see as the biggest opportunities for those businesses who can contribute positively to water conservation efforts?
There are a lot of opportunities here. So, you know, firstly, it's obviously at a very basic level, you are reducing the risk to your business, right? By, you know, working on water conservation and ensuring sustainability of supply, not only to your business, but also importantly to the surrounding communities. And, you know, if I go back to what we're doing, for example, with the Nature Conservancy, which is a great conservation organization. We do a lot of partnerships with them. So we've got a really interesting partnership going in Cape Town with it's called the Greater Cape Town Water Fund. And that was established more or less around the time when that day zero scenario where Cape Town was in theory going to run out of water came about. And what that partnership does is one of the major contributors to stress in Cape Town is invasive species. So the pine trees, etc., in these catchments, which suck up an enormous amount of water. And through this partnership, what the Nature Conservancy is doing is removing that those invasive species and rehabilitating it with the natural local indigenous vegetation. Sorry, so things like fynbos, which is really important there. And it's got some really, really interesting knock-on effects. So over and above the fact that it's supporting increased water supplies into their catchment, it's providing employment opportunities to local disadvantaged communities with a very strong focus on women. I've seen some really, really interesting results from the knock-on effect to local biodiversity. So they set camera traps, for example, and they're starting to see leopard coming back into the area, porcupine, and you know, some of the local antelope species are starting to come back in there. So, you know, when you ask what the advantages are, well, the opportunity is, yes, there's water, but you know, because water is so intricately tied into everything, you're starting to see things like the biodiversity benefits. It has, you know, socioeconomic impact benefits from, you know, whether it's employment or making sure that these local communities have access to clean and fresh water. It's got carbon benefits as well. So when you're rehabilitating these areas, you're getting the carbon sequestration opportunities there as well. So there's a whole lot of these little side benefits, co-benefits that sit alongside the work we're doing that benefit, you know, not only society, but business as a whole.
That's very inspiring, especially as I'm South Africa. So something with Cape Town and Fynbos is fabulous. Equally inspiring, PepsiCo recently announced that it has surpassed its 2025 goal. Can you tell us more about that and your future goals?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, we're very pleased to announce that we achieved that goal 2 years early. So that was our 25% reduction or 25% improvement in water use efficiency by 2025. And, you know, that was achieved again through, you know, a whole lot of parts of the puzzle that came together for PepsiCo. And kind of just reiterating what I said earlier, it was a combination of getting our people on board. You know, we had great leadership from our CEO, from our Chief Sustainability Officer, but also just, you know, local plant managers and people on the ground were really bought into this, which helped us tremendously. So we had the people on board. We had the processes in place as well. So that's making sure that, you know, yes, our people know what to do, but we need to make sure they've got the tools to enable them to then do what they need to do. So that goes back to what I was talking about in terms of making sure that we've got the right benchmarking in place, and we've got the ability to understand what's going on with water. Because one of the important things with water use efficiency is that before you even get to the shiny technology and the great stuff there, you need to make sure your processes are running as efficiently as they are with what you've got. And we benchmark relentlessly across that, right down to the line level. So that was a really important part of that journey as well. And then the third bit was then in terms of that new technology. So the potato stack recovery, which I was talking about, the membrane bioreactors, et cetera. So that all came together in terms of helping us hit our goal. But the work doesn't stop there. You know, as we were talking about earlier in this discussion, you know, water stress is not going away anytime soon. It's still looming large over us. And that's why, you know, we've doubled down on our commitments and we've set our 2030 goals now. And what those 2030 goals are committing us to do is working not only within our facilities to reduce water consumption, but also within our agriculture growing regions. And an important part of our 2030 goals as well is that we've expanded it to include our third-party manufacturers. So if you look at PepsiCo, we've got around 300 plants plus minus Once you expand that to our third-party manufacturing, you know, that goes up to about 1,000 plants. So we, our reach has grown quite significantly. And that's really, really important to move as we move along this water journey, that we bring as many of those people along with us as possible, so that we've got water goals that they need to meet as well. We have got a bit more aggressive with what we're doing at a watershed level. So we're committing to replenish more than 100% of the water that we use. So that really talks to enabling this watershed health that I was talking about. And then also importantly is ensuring access to vulnerable communities. And, you know, we've got a goal of hitting reaching 100 million people by 2030. So we're hitting that road quite nicely now. But yeah, that's also a really important goal for us as well. And then probably what the other goal, which I haven't mentioned, is we have committed to implement the AWS standard, which is Alliance for Water Stewardship. And really what that is it's really a management standard in terms of how companies can effectively manage their water stewardship journey. And it's really, really effective way to bring our different actors together to enable us to push towards these goals.
What would your takeaway message be?
Takeaway message would be, I think, yeah, firstly, water stress is not going away, right? And I think there is a risk of complacency that if you're not feeling it now, then we'll get to it some other time. And unfortunately, that's when you get to day zero Cape Town type scenarios where you just put it off, it's not a problem, and suddenly becomes a problem. So, you know, irrespective of whether you're in a high water risk area or not, I think companies need to take a very close look at water consumption, get efficient. There are cost savings to be had by improving your water use efficiency. And probably most importantly is this thing around collective collaborative action. We have to do it together. There's PepsiCo can't do it alone. Unilever can't do it alone. Whoever, we need to join together and work on this as a collective, because otherwise we'll never ever get this right. So it requires, you know, everyone to be on this journey if we're going to make any sort of change. As with many things, like including the climate change journey as well. It's really important that people act as a collective. And I think that's going to be the defining point in terms of how we get our act together and whether we're going to make the difference or not. And an open invitation for anyone listening to get in touch with us. And yeah, we're more than happy to help people along that journey.